Start your day of the Torah way in Northwest London.
Monday, Tu Bishvat, 17th of January. Rabbi Mordechai Weiss,
Tu Bishvat.
This week's Torah way has been sponsored by family of Lachman, Ben Nishmas of Bishayahu, Erebav Rob Shimshin Yaman Lagota, Marav Sora Reza Bas Rabin Yomin HaKoen, Alein HaShalom.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
First of all, I'd like to thank Dudi, but I think it's one of the first times he's actually here live by my speech. So I know he always listens to it afterwards, I'm sure. But since I'm able to give him a thanks, a personal thanks for giving me the opportunity and the honor and the privilege of being part of this wonderful Start Your Day the Torah way. So as you all know, and we just heard now from Rivianki, that this is Tu Bishvat. This is the day today. So Rav Dudi told me that the reason why he asked me, because he tried first to ask Litvish Rosh Hashiva, we told him that Tu Bishvat belongs to the Hasidim. Where we always go, you always see a big pile of fruits in front of all the rebbes. So that's why I decided to ask a Chusit. But he rightfully pointed out that it's actually quite ironic, because the Magen Avraham, who he's the Makor, who brings down this minig, actually says that the minig is from Ashkenaz. It actually took a couple of hundred of years until it came to the Hasidim, this minig. It was only after the Sefer Chemda Sayumim was printed when the minig really got out there. And in fact, the problem with this minig is that usually most of the Hasidish Manhugim are based on the Kisvai Huarizal, based on the Kabuleh. This minig actually is not brought down, it's not mentioned at all in the Sefer HaMekabulim. The whole thing stamped from a minig in Ashkenaz, and the Chemdas Yilam, he was the first one who really actually articulated this minig. So it's very difficult to know exactly what this minig is all about, what the basis of this minig is. So I'd like to try and take out some practical lesson that we could take out from this whole thing of Tu Bishvat. And in fact, I think I'll start off with a question that Rivianki just mentioned now, which is quite problematic, which is that we all seem to have this mistake that Tu Bishvat is the Yom HaDin of Peiros Iron of fruit, which actually, in fact, is not true. We all know the Gebura in Rosh Hashanah clearly says that Rosh Hashanah Leilunis is on Tu Bishvat, called Tu Basil, but Nidoinim al Peiros Iron is only on Shavuos. So the question is, why do we make a whole yontif of fruit today? In fact, maybe we should have done the other way around. We should have brought in the fruit on Shavuos and then hung up all the plants on Tu Bishvat, because you said it's the Rosh Hashanah Leilonis. So someone told me it wouldn't really work out, because all the rebbes who sit by the table, they couldn't bring in a platter of fruit, they'd have to bring in a platter of flowers, a bouquet of flowers. It probably wouldn't look that good. So probably wouldn't be better. That's why we're better off. But you have to understand, why are we making such a big to-do with the Peiros Ilon, when, in fact, the main Yontif, the main Rosh Hashanah, the Peiros Ilon is actually Monotzeis. So I'd like to start off with a personal story that happened to me quite recently. I was in America. It was a few months ago. I went to America for a chasana. I'm not going to go into all the details of the story, but to make a long story short, I had a plane to catch on Thursday afternoon. I think it was a 7 o'clock plane to get back to England. So I knew how to get from Borough Park to Newark Airport. It usually take about 3/4 of an hour, an hour, so I made sure to call my car in advance. And I was all happy with myself, and of course I always did the last minute shopping. You always make sure to do that just before you leave. Always leave it for the last minute. But yeah, I was sure I've got this good company waiting for me by my hotel. I come into the hotel, and to make a long story short, there was a big misunderstanding. The car never turned up. Of course the company could have sent me another car. No, sorry, no cars available. This time of the day, impossible to get any cars. Tried one company, another company. Finally, they managed to find a company called Mexicano. So the name itself of the company already tells you more or less what the driver was all about. Someone who is definitely, one language he did not know was English. I don't know which language he did know. English was not one of his languages. Anyways, we start going to the airport, and I don't know if he knew the way, didn't know the way. I look in the navigator, and to my Mazel, I see that he pulled me right into a dense traffic, like one of those standstill traffics, and it's just simply not moving. And I see there on the navigator tells you when the arrival time, so it starts going up later and later and later. I usually like to be in the airport at least 2 hours in advance. If my flight is 7 o'clock, I like to be there for 5 o'clock. And at the moment it's saying that we're going to arrive quarter to six, which is an hour and a quarter before the flight is about to depart. All right, so I think I'll probably still be able to push it. And as we are going there and the traffic is getting more slower and slower, I see that it's going up 4:45, 10:06, 5:06, 6 o'clock. And I could imagine I was not a happy camper. I had no one to complain to because I said I didn't even understand English, so that to make things even better. So as we're going there, we're standing in the traffic. And by that time, so the flight already says we arrive at 6:05. And my mind starts racing and I start thinking, you know, what's going to happen? I'm going to miss this flight. I have to be back the next morning, Friday morning. Shabbos is coming along. And to make things even better, my brother-in-law is making a bris the next morning, Friday morning here in London. And I have to be in time for the bris. Of course, they're going to give me Sunday course, of course. So, you know, if I'm not going to make it in time. Anyway, so, you know, when your mind starts going, you go into something which is called panic mode. It goes panic mode and then Sunday, and to make things even better, this driver starts dozing off. As you know, standing in the traffic, it's moving every 2 minutes, it starts dozing off. So I said, hello. So he says, Don't worry. That's normal. I always do it whenever I drive. I always doze off for it. That really calmed me down, knowing that it's normal custom that he does. He dozes off usually in the middle of the motorway. Anyway, so as I'm standing there, and all tense, full of anxiety, the panic. And I was just standing there, and I was looking at time to look at the standstill traffic. So I was looking at the time, this big orchard, a field full of trees. And I'm standing there, watching these trees swaying slightly, calmly, serenity in the wind. I was looking at this thing and thinking to myself, have a look, why are these trees so calm, so serene? What's this about them? So I thought to myself, you know, they have nothing to be worried about. What have they to be worried about? They know that there's someone taking care of them. They know that they're fully taken care of. Hashem is watching them. That every move that they do in the wind, it's all preordained. There's a malach that tells them exactly what move to do. They have nothing to be worried about. Just think to myself, one second. Chazal say, ki ha'udam ha'itzasudah. A person is no different to a tree. However much Hashkuch HaPrutis, the Rebbeinu Shalom has on a tree, much more so when it comes to a person. That man, the Yuv Chai, Yuv Mazoyin, the Rebbeinu Shalom, he created the person, he takes care of all the person's needs. He's fully taken care of. What's that to go into panic mode all about? You're fully taken care of. So I thought to myself, if this tree could sit there so calm and so serene, why should I be any different? So all of a sudden, my entire thing, I told Hashem, you know, I'm just going to let myself be swayed in the wind. I'm just going to sit here and relax, sitting this Mexicano car and enjoying the ride. That would have been the end of the story. I actually happened to have had the ending of the story. I ended up getting to the airport it was 10 past 6, which was 50 minutes before the flight. By the time I got into the building, it was 3/4 of an hour before the flight. I come in, the line is there from going in a zigzag all the way around the room. And I think to myself, you know, as I'm standing there, I look at the front of the line by the till. I see a friend of mine standing there by the till. He must have noticed me coming in, and he points to me, come here. I go straight to the front of the line. He tells this fellow by the till that we're all one family, all going together. This fellow said, you're lucky you came now because you're going to be the last people I'm letting on the flight. Let me on the flight. 3/4 of an hour later, I was on the air, on the way to London. So not only did I make the flight, but I actually ended up enjoying the ride to the airport. And even more so, I learned a powerful lesson for life, which that lesson still keeps me going to this very day. Whenever I go into panic mode and I get stressed, full of anxiety, the first thing I remember is, have a look at this tree. So serene. Ki hu'ulam, ki hu'ulam aitzasudah. I'm just thinking to myself, let us imagine if we would go into the mind of this tree for a moment. Here you have this tree standing there in the beginning of Kislev, Hanukkah time. The tree thinks to himself, look at me, I'm so, what's going to be? What's going to happen? You know, it's been so long since I've had the last time, but I used to have once upon a time, many months ago, I produce such beautiful fruits, such juicy, nice red fruits. Here I am, completely barren. No fruits, no leaves, no nothing. What's going to be? I have to start doing something about it. I have to start trying to help myself and try and create, be more productive. I have to maybe perhaps start taking more vitamins. Maybe I should start take some treatment. I have to make sure that the fruit should come out, and he gets all stressed up and all full of anxiety, full of panic. All of a sudden, Tu Beshvat comes along, and he sees some little sprouts coming out of him, some little buds coming out of him. And then, slowly but surely, these beautiful fruits come out, these juicy, beautiful fruits come out, and he thinks to himself, how did I do this? How did this happen? How did I create this? The Rambam says, you did not create it. This Ribbono Shel Olam created it. You didn't have to do anything. Regardless of what you would have done in advance, this was bashayt to happen, this was meant to happen, and it would have happened regardless of whether you tried or not. This is an important and powerful lesson. We have to remember this thing. Let's face it, we all want to create. We all want to be creative and productive. And being productive is in many, many areas. It could be in the spiritual level, being productive, learning, davening, other people give shiurim, other people have chavrusas, want to write chiddush haTorah. Everyone has their area, they want to be productive. May it be in a physical level, it could be parents, it could be children. We all want to be productive. We want to be productive in the financial level. People have businesses, people want to make money. People want to create, people want to produce, they want to be productive. And most of us go into panic mode and we start thinking, getting full of anxiety, how are we going to be able to produce this? How are we going to be able to produce that? All we have to remember is that the final result, the pyrus, the fruit which are going to come out eventually, has nothing to do with what you did. Regardless of whether you did or not, this thing, anything which is going to happen, will happen anyway. All you have to do is to do your ishtaras. And this is where it gets a little bit tricky, to know the boundaries, to know the difference between ishtadlus and results. But one thing is clear, that the result is going to have absolutely no connection to the ishtadlus that you are going to do. There's a famous mushul that's brought down in the Sfura, and the Sfura Magnation bring it down. I think it's brought down from Reb Nachman Breslov, I think it's brought down. He said the following mushul. He said a person came into a town, and there's a poor beggar, and he's schlepping all his peklich on his back, and he's hungry, he's tired, he's looking for a place to rest his weary bones. And he asks someone, where is it a place where I could go and take something to eat? I haven't eaten in days. He says, you go into this in the street. He go to the Rosh Hakul of the town, the president. He's such a generous person. He gives the free of charge anything. He gives food. Go to this person, he'll give you everything you need. So he goes to that street, and there's a whole bunch of villas standing there. And he, by mistake, knocks on the wrong door. He knocks on the right next door, this generous person. There you have this cruel officer who he opened. He lived in that house. And he sees the poor beggar coming in. He says, where could I have something to eat? He said, sure, of course I could have something to eat. I'll give you everything you need. Just one slight problem. It's not a problem, that's a condition that everyone knows. Whoever comes to my house to eat food first has to do some work around the house, because you know, you don't just get things free of charge. You work for a certain amount of time. Afterwards you work, believe me, it'll be worth it. You'll get all the food you need. So this fellow starts working and schwitzing, and he makes him go up and down the stairs and clean up the whole house. This fellow feels he's about to collapse. As he finishes working there for an hour straight, this fellow says, I'm so hungry, I can't take it anymore. He says, no problem, go straight down to my dining room. We'll see. Just go outdoors, go to the next door villa, knock on the door there, they'll lay into my kitchen there, down there, there's a big dining room, they'll give you everything you need. So this fellow goes out the house, knocks on the door, and they, of course, they let him in, and he's this servant with this, you know, with a golden platter. They give him food, and they give him drink, and they give him a place to rest on the bed, and they give him everything he needs. And he's so taken aback, and he says, after when he finishes, he goes over to the fellow who's standing there, and he says, I have to thank you, believe me, it was worth all the hard work I had to do to get this. Every penny of it was worth it. For the service I got afterwards, it was everything was worth it. So this fellow says, what work are you talking about? He says, what do you mean? You told me first I have to work hard, and then I'll get this breakfast. He says, listen, this place, no one has to work. Here you just get served on a golden platter. If you had to work, it had nothing to do with this breakfast over here. You had to work because this fellow was a cruel fellow and wanted to play games on you. In this place, you get things free of charge. So Tzadikim said the same thing when it comes to people think that there's a connection between the ishtadlus that they do and the result that comes after, comes later. But that thing is absolutely not true. There's two separate things. There's the actual service, the actual result you get at the end, but the lunch that he gives direct on the revelation. Besides for that, there is a gezeira, there's a dinner bestadlis, there's a gezeira, gezeira, pecha, toicha, leichem, which that is a chayvus bestadlis, a person has to do what he has to do, but there's no connection between what the person does to the final result. The actual fruit that will come in the end has nothing to do with you. I heard from my grandfather, Rabbi Tversky, Baruchi Rebbe, he said that in the family we have a kabule from the Zlotsheve Magid, Remech Zlotsheve. It's a kabule, ish mipi ish, up until Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, this is a generation to generation, all the way, tracing all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu. This kabule, he said that the line goes as follows, in the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. That there's no place in the world for mori. There's no place for dagas. Why? Because Memunashech, if it's something that you could actually change, then why are you worrying about it? Change it. And if it's something that you cannot change, then what's the point of worrying about it? It's not going to help you anyway. So that's why there's no place. Obviously, it's easier said than done. But that is the truth. I'd like to take this one step further. Chazal HaKadoshim say, we know that there's a Shishu Sidra Mishneh. Zruem Moyed Ushem Nezikim Kodeshim Taharis. This is Merumas in the Pusik, Behoyu Eminas Iteichu Choysen Yeshias Chochmas Vadas, which each one is symbolizes one or the other of the Shishu Sidra Mishneh. The first one, which is Eminas, which is Emune, that symbolizes Zeruim. The Pash of Zeruim. So the question is, what's the connection between Zeruim plants and Emune? There's many, many various Mahalchim, but I think one very simple Mahalch is very simple. Because when it comes to work, in most cases, people are able to live in the thinking that it is them that actually did whatever they did. They were the ones that produced whatever they did. But there's one area where the person, no one could have that mistake. It is quite clear to everyone that the final result has nothing to do with you. And that is when it comes to plants. When it comes to planting, you put a little seed inside, the result that's going to come out has nothing to do with how red the apple will be, how juicy, how sweet, has nothing to do with the person. All the person could do is put the seeds in, and he could try and get rid of the weeds, he could try and get rid of the, he could prune the trees, he could try and help it, but the actual final result, the final fruit of the labor that's going to come out, has nothing to do with the person. That's one area of the person is able to be mechazik as amuna, knowing that has nothing to do with me. The result has absolutely nothing to do with me. Udo Marisha came along, and he said he wanted to be in control. He wanted to be the one to run the world. He is Sim Kalikim. He wanted, why should I let myself be run by the Rebbein Shlodim? Why not take care of my own things? Rebbein Shlodim told him, you're a fool. He says, you could have so easily lived in paradise and I would have given everything, I would have taken care of everything for you. Because you wanted to take control yourself, then that's what you're going to have to do. And we'll have to start working for it. But, it will still be clear to you that the final result, the final fruit of your labor will be from the Rebbein Shlodim. All you will be able to do is get rid of the weeds, get rid of the bad things, but the actual final fruit of your labor will be from me, and it will be clear to everyone that it's going to be only from me. That is the end of a pyre. When a person takes a fruit, a person could clearly see that this is called Kili Yad Hashem. The person who is planting the tree doesn't have to try and think, where could I get some good food coloring to make sure that the apple should be bright and red? Where could I get some sugar? How much sugar do I have to put in to make sure that it should be sweet enough that it should taste good? That has nothing to do with you. How it's going to taste, how it's going to look, that has nothing to do with the person himself. This is Negaya to every single person throughout his life. When a person is here, wants to produce, wants to be productive, he should remember this symbol of fruit. That the final result, the fruit of your labor, is going to be fruit. It's going to be like fruit. It's going to be 100% from the Rebbein Shlom. You could do your Ishtadlis, you could try your best, but it will be 100% from the Rebbein Shlom. So here the question comes up. People ask, so how could I know? How could I know when I'm doing the things Ishtadlis because it's Ishtadlis? Or how, maybe I'm doing it because I think that I'll be the one who's going to bring the result. So I always often tell people, I think there's a very easy way to tell whether you are doing the Ishtadlis with the right perspective in mind or not. And that is a very, very, that is the following. I don't know if you ever thought about it, but if you're going to think of a person, let's take two professions. And we'll just to bring out the difference between the two professions. So here you have, on the one hand, you have a farmer. The farmer Now, a farmer could be physically a difficult job. He has to work in the fields all day. But emotionally, he doesn't become emotionally stressed, because there's not much stress in that type of job of pruning the trees, taking out the weeds. It's something that, in fact, that nowadays people very often use it as a therapy. It's very therapeutic for people to work with the ground. It calms down the person, it brings the person to a mode of serenity. Whereas let's take, on the other hand, a different example of a doctor. A doctor is meant to be one of the most stressful jobs available. In fact, I just recently read an interview of a doctor who was a surgeon, a brain surgeon. He said that he made a survey, and the last 10 brain surgeons who died at the age of 61. Because it's an extremely, enormously stressful job, knowing that you're now, you've got the lives of the person, the lives of your patients is in your hands, and every little move, if you make even the slightest mistake in this move, you've killed this patient of yours. It's extremely, extremely stressful. Why is farming such a calm job and that's so stressful? The answer is very simple. Because the more the person thinks that it's up to me, I'm going to be the one who's going to have to do it, and if I make one little mistake, the whole thing is gone, it becomes extremely stressful. A farmer knows that the final result has nothing to do with me, so what's the point of being stressed? All I could do, I put the seeds in, I could get rid of all the weeds, do the basic work I have to do. The final result is up completely to Hashem. If a person wants to know himself whether he's doing his ishtadlus with the right perspective in mind, that's a very simple way of knowing how stressed out do you become. When it comes, how emotionally draining is it by the end of the day, by the end of the day's work? If a person could go through the day being b'shal b'sanefesh, being calm, being serene, he does what he has to do, then that's a proof that he's doing it with the right perspective in mind. He's doing it knowing that the final result is like fruit, it has nothing to do with him. Whereas if the person gets all stressed up, but towards the end of the day he feels he's so emotionally drained that every time he makes a telephone call he's emotionally involved, and that's no good. Because that's a proof that he's not doing it with the right perspective in mind. That's a proof that he's convinced that he is the one who has to do it, and the final result depends on all moves that I'm going to do. I think this is one of the main lessons we could take out of this Chamisha Usa B'Shvat, to remember this concept, Ki Hu'udam Haitza Suda, a person is like, whenever we get stressed up, remember this thing, Ki Hu'udam Haitza Suda, I'm like the tree doesn't get stressed up, thinking of how is it going to produce this fruit, it's something which comes. It comes automatically. I think that's the reason, maybe perhaps, why we take the fruit. We started off the question, the fruit, the Rosh Hashanah for the fruit, Nidoinim is only on Shavuos. We take the fruit and we look at this apple or this pear and we say to ourselves, who is the one that made this pear? Was it us? It wasn't us, it was the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why we make a bruch, we make a very pruvite, we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. But the ik is, this is meant to be a reminder for us that all the fruits of our labor also has nothing to do with what we do. It's completely up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Finish off with two short stories. One of them is a mushul, and the other one actually is a story. The mushul goes as follows. This famous mushul of the Dibna Magid. Dibna Magid, others bring it down from the Chofetz Chaim. He says there was this person, I mentioned this before. There was a person who had a wholesome wagon, a wealthy person, and he was going down the road and he sees this old beggar, this old poor person, schlepping his peklich on his back, pulling nebuch, struggling, and he tells this poor person, how about I'll give you a lift, wherever you want to go to, I'll take you to your destination. The poor person thanks him from the bottom of his heart, comes onto this wagon and sits down, and he's holding the speckle, and he's still holding the speckle and struggling on the speckle. So this wealthy person tells him and turns to him and says, why are you schlepping the speckle? I mean, you're sitting on my wagon, you might as well just take it off and put it down on the floor, then you can at least relax. He says, no. He says, what do you understand? He says, it's not enough that you did me such a big favor that you took me onto your wagon. You're still going to have to schlep my peckle. Also, I feel bad to make you work so hard. That's why I don't want to schlep the peckle. So he says, you fool. And anyway, my wagon is anyway schlepping a peckle. Regardless of whether you're holding it or not, you're anyway schlepping it. Some people say the Dibna Magid or the Chofetz Chaim. He said, the Pusik of the Melech says, Hashleich al Hashem Yehovchu v'hiyachal kaleku. Which means people go around their entire life pulling all the peklech on the shoulders, when in fact it's the Bnei Shalom who's anyway running the life for them. You might as well sit down and enjoy your ride and enjoy yourself, but why do you have to pull your peklech and you think, you feel bad for the Bnei Shalom that he should have to schlep the peklech for you? Don't worry, he's doing it anyway, regardless of whether you want it or not. Hashlech al Hashem Yehovchu, take your peklech and don't carry the entire world on your shoulders. A small final story I heard recently. I had an uncle, he's quite famous. He was known as Dr. Abram J. Twersky. He was my grandfather's brother. He was a famous psychiatrist. He was the author of over 90 books. And he was a world-famous psychiatrist, and he helped thousands upon thousands of people with all sorts of problems, emotional problems. So he once recalled the incident that he was working in the psychiatry ward in one of the hospitals. So they were doing all sorts of exercises with the patients and trying to help them, doing different crafts and different whatever it was, different workshops for them to help them with their emotional needs. So there was this one fellow who, a little bit interesting, and he always used to stand in the corner of the room, in one place, with his hands up in the air. So he stands there for hours on end with his hands up in the air. So my uncle comes into the psychiatry ward and he says, you know, he calls all the patients to come and he's going to do with them a workshop. And he asks one of the people who work there, you know, what about this fellow standing there in the corner? You know, how about he also joins us? So they tell him, don't start up with him. Forget it. He's never going to. We've tried so many times to ask him to join our workshops. He's too busy standing there in the corner with his hands up in the air. So my uncle tells him, maybe how about if I go and try and persuade him to come to do the workshop? He said, you're wasting your time. We've tried for years. This fellow's here for years. We've tried for years to get him to come. Nothing doing. So my uncle says, how about I try? Do you mind if I try? He said, no problem. He goes over to the corner. He goes over to this fellow. Has a little conversation with him for 2 minutes. Conversation finishes. This fellow puts his hands down. Comes over to the workshop. And does the work, the crafts that they had to do. These people were like in shock. Like, talking to this fellow who stood there for years, standing in the corner with his hands up in the air, and all of a sudden they couldn't understand what went on. So they came over to my uncle, they asked him, could you explain to us what went on over here? He said, yeah, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I went over to this fellow and I asked him, you know, we're making a workshop now, how about, do you want to join us? This fellow says, no, I can't. I cannot possibly do it. He says, why not? He says, you have to understand, I am holding up the entire world. I'm standing with my hands up in the air, I'm holding up the entire world. If I'm going to let go, the entire world is going to collapse. So I can't do it. So my uncle looks at him and says, wow, I'm so grateful for you. You know, you're doing such a contribution to mankind. You're holding up the entire world. I really feel for you. You know what? How about we make a little change for a few minutes? You give me the world to carry. I'll carry the world for you. And then you go do the workshop. When you finish doing the workshop, we'll exchange and I'll give you back the world to carry. So this fellow goes over to him, gives him over this world. My uncle, of course, takes the whole world from him and sends this fellow to the workshop to sit down to do the work. So my uncle says, you know, for us it's very easy to laugh at this story. He says, how many of us look exactly like this person? We walk around entire life holding our world in our hands, thinking that we are the ones who are actually holding up the world, not knowing that it has nothing to do with us. The world will continue regardless of whether we are going to hold it up or not. The world will continue. The world doesn't need us to hold it up. And all the more so when it comes to our own personal world, has nothing to do with us. The results, the fruit of the labor, is going to come out. It's b'shet. Mezonoisov shaludom katzivim lo imereisha shune v'adreisha shune. Whatever results is meant to happen is going to happen regardless. All we have to do is do our ishtadlis, be like a robot, do what we have to do because we have to do it. But ultimately, knowing the final result will be up to the Ben Shalom. The Ben Shalom should help. We should take out this lesson from Tu B'Shvat, and we should be able to live our entire life based on this lesson and remembering this Yisoid. Whenever we go into panic mode, we will remember Ki Hu'udam Aitz Hasudeh. We are like a tree. Just like the tree doesn't get stressed up, thinking how is it going to produce its fruits, we are not going to get stressed up. I'm going to leave everything to the Ben Shalom. Thank you. Oh, yeah, they'll tell you, oh, yeah, it's good.